Elephant in the Room is an anarchist radio show from Dresden, Europe, where we talk with activists from all around the world about politics, life and universe. Airing every second and fourth Monday of the month on Color Radio. You can find the podcast version of the show on the Channel Zero Network or on your favorite podcast platform. From activists for activists.
The band sounds great.
Germany was never a real stronghold of anarchism. However, even with big social democratic and communist movement, anarchists were able to organize for years, with anarchist syndicalism blooming in the 1920s. After Nazi time, anarchist syndicate FAU was restored, but as many other revolutionary organizations, never exploded into anything big so far. Today, we have an activist and friend from FAU with whom we are going to talk about past, present, and future of syndicalism in Germany. Hello.
Hi, and thanks for the invitation.
And we also have a friend and a comrade.
Hi.
So, for the people who have no idea about Germany apart from Berlin and fun and all this stuff, can you explain what is eventually FAU? What does it stand for? What is the acronym? And so on and so forth. Just a basic introduction of the organization.
Okay, so FAU stands for Freie Arbeiterin und Arbeiter Union, which translates into English as Free Workers Union. And it is an anarcho-syndicalist organization. That means, on the one hand, we are unionists. That's what syndicalism stands for. That means we believe in the idea that workers should organize on, based on their common experience as being exploited by the bosses and by the state. And they should do so in workers-led grassroots organizations, as opposed to business unions that are run by bureaucrats or, let's say, different kind of bosses from within the working class. And on the other hand, we're also related to anarchism. In the sense that we are very skeptical of the centralization of power, be it in the form of a centralized nation state or in the form of a centralized party and so on. So we are at the interface of the two. Anarchism as a political idea and a criticism of the state, and syndicalism as an actual movement and as the idea that workers should organize themselves and fight back. So that's what FAU is actually about.
That all sounds good, but how popular is right now FAU and anarchist syndicalism within, let's say, anarchist circles, but also within the leftist circle or within some kind of a progressive movements in Germany? Because we know that in some countries unionism is over, like it was smashed and there is nothing happening. So maybe it will be interesting to describe the current situation with syndicalism, but also with unionism in Germany at the current state.
Within the working class and the trade union movement, we are a minority organization, so we cannot be compared to big organizations such as the workers' unions that are organized within the big trade union confederation called DGB. But because we are quite militant and we've been successful in the past years in certain sectors of the economy, and we have won certain struggles too, we are not unknown. So many activists within the big, rather social democratic unions and also bureaucrats there, they know of FAU, and some even sympathize with FAU. So, and I think some of them appreciate what we are doing. And within the anarchist movement, I think it depends pretty much on the city. So there are cities where FAU is not even present, where there's no a local organization, or there are cities where FAU is just a small, rather political group. But in certain cities, such as, let's say, Berlin, Leipzig, or Jena, V is a pretty well-established organization within the local movement, and I have the impression that, at least in those contexts, comrades from other tendencies or from other organizations also appreciate what we're doing, and in certain struggles or in certain situations, we also build coalitions and do campaigns together. So I think it depends pretty much on the city, but in certain cities we are well established and I'd say also appreciated part of the movement. And generally speaking, anarchism in Germany is not that well organized. And when people talk about anarchism in Germany, in very general terms, they often say that V is one of the bigger organizations of anarchism. V and then maybe the platform, a new platformist anarcho-communist organization, and the Federation of German-speaking anarchists. So usually V is mentioned alongside the other two as representing contemporary anarchism in Germany.
Well, and I think taking in account the members, then FAU is the biggest organization for sure, the biggest anarchist organization.
For me, like learning through the history, I was not, before coming to Germany, part of syndicalist movement or an anarchist union, though we were these people who would, you know, print the leaflets by ourselves and go to the factories and, you know, try to agitate workers. And we were really disappointed that they didn't want to join our anarchist union. I think I was back then 18, 19 years old. And we had in our head this perspective that anarchist syndicalism is, you know, like this militant organizations of workers that are constantly striking, constantly fighting. They are not stopping there all the time, like having this fire in their ass. How much of that is happening within the FAU? Like how much of this stereotype is there? And what is eventually the daily syndicalist work or the daily work of an anarchist syndicalist?
Well, some of that spirit is present in V. So in the past years, there have been rather militant struggles. Let's take Leipzig as an example, where V set up workplace groups in companies such as Durst Express or Domino's Pizza, which is like couriers delivering food or beverages. And when the Durst Express door in Leipzig was shut down, or when a unionist and comrade was fired at Domino's Pizza, V was pretty quick to organize protests and to make a lot of noise. And that was reported on even by mainstream press. So there is part of that spirit that we fight back, we do react, we don't let bosses get away with everything. But yeah, this is what happens in so-called hot shops, where tensions are high, but usually our everyday work is having meetings, discussing things. Then we offer counseling. In Jena, for example, we have a weekly counseling. Workers come and tell us their problems and we try to give them advice. When they join up with the union, we also support them in practical terms. We help them file a complaint against the boss. We help them organize pickets in front of their stores, or we explain them what their contract is about. So this is our everyday work, which is maybe not always as interesting and exciting as the image you had in mind when thinking about anarcho-syndicalism back then. But I think it is very important work, because this way we can actually help people get what they are entitled to. And I mean that also in very material terms. So get their wages or get the compensation when they get fired. So we can show them that we actually represent their interests. We're not just talking about revolution, talking about a future, better society, but we can help them in very material terms here and today. And I think that's very important if you want to organize more than just already convinced militants or activists. If you want to organize people on a broader basis, then you actually need to represent their interests. And I think this sometimes quite tiring everyday work is very important because this is actually representing their interests.
What I see, which role actually FAO often has in different cities, is supporting the people who actually, like foreign workers, who are not really organized in unions here. There were several like big situations, for example, last season to, like there are a lot of people coming for the seasonal work in the agriculture, and they're usually coming from different countries. So there were different cases where people were quite supportive, or for example, here in Dresden, there were a lot of issues with workers on the construction site, which often didn't speak even the language. And then somehow there were a lot of support, which you don't have from bigger unions, for example. So this I see also as a role FAO actually took in last years. And I guess in general, I think the historical ideas of syndicalism and how the whole organizing started also is kind of quite different, because right now we have a total different situation, for example, in Germany, on who is actually part of the union. Like all the examples you mentioned, for example, this is people who are really in kind of really individualized jobs. So it's not like you have a factory and then there are 50 workers who are all together in the union and fighting for their higher wages or holidays, rather than you have really the situation of really individual people working in kind of really different situations. And it's way more complicated actually to organize them. So I guess this also maybe kind of changes a bit the spirit, no? I mean, when we see syndicalism in a historical sense, it had kind of also different development, right? We had in the 19th centuries where anarchists were still just shooting and bombing people like kings and rich like capitalists. And then there was kind of a turn in the question of how do we want to present these anarchist ideas and how do we actually be closer to the people and how do we kind of get out of this huge repression problems. So when the whole syndicalism started growing, this was also kind of a tactical situation or change of how do we actually involve into politics and labor struggle, which was really important at the end of the 19th, beginning of the 20th century, because a lot of migrant workers were just traveling all around the world with this first globalization, huge globalization wave. And from that here back then, there was a way broader organization in the sense why also all the anarchist syndicalists unions were way bigger as it is right now, actually, all around the world.
Yeah, I think, like, jumping back to the history, I think most of us remember Bakunin, Marx history, that Germany was, like, left to the social democrats. Although there were some anarchists before that, like, after the split of the International. But I believe politically it was... Germany was more social democratic country with a lot of influence of Marx and all the Socialist Party. However, how did it come to anarchist syndicalism in Germany? Because I think the history is a little bit different than it was like in France or in Spain, where syndicalism was a really strong movement that was becoming like one of the biggest and basics of the anarchist organizing.
Well, I think around 1900 or even before that, there was, let's say, a small faction within the trade union movement that were opposed to centralism, and they were opposed to the influence of the Social Democratic Party within the trade union movement. They were called the localists, and but they were indeed a very tiny faction within the broader working class movement then, and a faction that totally went underground during the First World War because they were opposed to the war, in contrast to the Social Democrats who actually supported the war. And after the war, at the end of the war, when there was also a revolutionary situation in Germany too, this faction, this current emerged from the underground and could organize openly again. And that's the interesting thing that happened. It formed a coalition and then a common organization with other different militant working class groups. So there were all kinds of militant and radical groups of workers in Germany, often called workers unions, such as the General Workers Union, the Allgemeine Arbeiterunion. And those different groups would join forces and in 1919 officially found V, well, then called FAUD, so the Free Workers Union of Germany. In that still quite revolutionary situation, this organization fastly grew up to 150,000 to 200,000 members in size, at the beginning of the 20s. And this organization was involved in many revolutionary struggles and also the general strike that happened then. Well, after that, the organization shrunk in membership to about 3,000 to 5,000 members at the beginning of the 30s when the Nazis took power. So it, from a mass organization that it for a short period of time was in the early 20s, it became an organization of, let's say, rather convinced and ideologically convinced militants and activists without, however, a broader mass base within the working class. So that's the short history of syndicalism in Germany in the 20s and 30s. And that core of militants that still was still organized in the early 30s, well, went underground when the Nazis took power. So they would set up underground groups or go abroad. There were quite some people going to Spain to fight there and support the Spanish Revolution there. Well, not many of them survived or continued to be active after the war. So syndicalism, one could say, was mostly smashed by the Nazis.
Yeah, but I think, as you said already, it was already kind of declining in the general size of the organization. So, which you also should mention that there was the big inflation, which I think also affected a lot the whole general political, agitation on daily life for people. So I think there were different reasons why this also happened. And also, like, FAU was also back then strong in certain regions, like, for example, the whole Ruhrgebiet, so the whole western part where all these coal mines and like big heavy industry was present. And for example, in Berlin, there was a huge kind of, you say chapter, where you could see that actually the kind of, what I found interesting is that they were really, the way they were organizing. So one thing is organizing on the working places. The other thing is organizing around the rest of the life, like doing family. There are a lot of pictures with huge family meetings where like all the syndicalists brought their families and friends and were doing holiday and not holiday, but weekend gatherings together. And I think you really could see there like this more general perspective on organizing, not only in the working place, but this kind of broader idea. Pretty interesting. And also in the 20s, what you already mentioned, organized syndicalists were really radical because there were a lot of kind of not only strikes, but really fights against right-wing groups back then in the Weimar Republic. And so there were really kind of clashes where people were really fighting, involved in fights back then.
You said that there was a decline by the end of the 20s in syndicalism. What was the reason? And also what is interesting for me, there was this anti-fascist action formed up in Germany quite late as a union of the communist groups and I think socialists as well, no? or socialists didn't join the anti-fascist action in the beginning?
I think there were different coalitions or attempts to set up a broad unity front of the working class against fascism. I think what was then called the Anti-Fascist Action was an organization started by the communists actually in the early 30s.
Right. So socialists had their own, communists had their own organization. What was the anarchist and what was the reaction of FAU towards the Nazi terror and the rising of the Brown threat eventually in Germany?
So the struggle against fascism started pretty early after the war. So, you know, you had that revolutions and, let's say, working class uprisings in 1918, 1919, and those were followed by attempts, mostly by army people, to seize power and to reverse all the changes that the working class had achieved then. So, in 1920, like army people around Kapp made a coup d'etat and tried to seize power. And they were stopped by the working class making a general strike. And FAU was also involved in that general strike, especially in their strongholds. There were also other big struggles then. For example, the French army had occupied the Ruhr area, where FAU was also pretty active organizing workers. And there was also a general strike by different working class organizations, among them FAU too. So that was in the early 20s. Later, there were more, like when the Nazis would gain more influence in the working class and also set up their squads, their street squads, DSA squads. Other organizations reacted, and also FAU too set up their own groups, or it was rather young people within FAU just setting up those groups. I think there were discussions within FAU if to focus on working class organizing or fighting Nazis in the streets, but there were definitely some groups in different cities called Schwarze Scharen who did that. They would set up groups and try to confront fascists in the streets. So that was the role of FAU in the anti-fascist struggle in the 20s and 30s. And as I mentioned earlier, they continued the anti-fascist struggle, but underground or from abroad in Spain. And as to the decline of FAU, well, I think one factor to consider is that it was a general decline in revolutionary organizing, not just FAU's decline, because immediately after the war, even like at the end of the war, you had a revolutionary situation in Germany with workers and soldiers protesting and setting up councils and making demands, and they managed to have the Kaiser abdicate and establish a republic. I mean, these were like huge gains, and those revolutionary struggles continued until the early 20s. I mean, there were people like Max Hölz, for example, was a guy, a kind of dissident communist here in Saxony in the Vogtland region, who set up a group of militant and armed workers, and they would just go and expropriate bosses and free prisoners from the prison. And I mean, they were armed, they were illegalists, and of course they were then chased by the army and the police, and Max Hölz was detained and put into prison. But this was the situation until the early 20s, in which FAU was very strong. And then it declined with fascism growing, the state consolidating its power, with the state establishing certain institutions of class compromise. For example, what had started out as revolutionary workers' councils was transformed by the state into, let's say, reformist works councils, as they continue to exist until today. And they were not meant to be a body of the working class to fight in a militant way. They were meant to establish a certain class compromise within the, at the workplace. So this whole revolutionary period had ended, I'd say, in the early 20s. And I'd add to that that there was also a lot of repression, too. I mean, those uprisings and general strikes were smashed with bloodsheds, and many revolutionaries were killed or put into prison or had to go abroad. So, and with that revolutionary period ending, of course, it was pretty hard for revolutionary organizations to continue organizing at the same level. Because then you had to find new strategies for a not that revolutionary period. And I think many people were also disillusioned and had lost faith in the revolution. So I think probably many people also withdrew from revolutionary politics. And that affected FAU. But not only FAU, I think many other organizations too.
You've been researching a lot about the part of women organizing within FAU at the period of like its blooming and its decline. Can you talk a little bit about that? What was, how progressive back then was the syndicalist movement of Germany?
Yeah, that's a good question actually. Like from one hand, workers kind of actually considered organizing women, even so women from one hand were working. On the other hand, there were also a lot of women not working and were at home, like kind of as housewives. And so as we right now discussed, this kind of organizations need also people. So of course, this was someone they would like to kind of encourage to join. So they kind of created a special branch. It was called eventually the Syndicalist Women Organization of the, it's called Syndicalistischer Frauenbund, which eventually had the task to mobilize women being at home and doing basically homework things, which, yeah. And, well, they weren't, I mean, the highest number of members were around 1,000. They managed to kind of mobilize for that. And they did had a newspaper, which actually was kind of part of the general newspaper of the syndicalist. And like it's called the syndicalist, they had a special part was for the women organization. And also they had a newspaper which was close to this organization here in Dresden, which was not exactly part of FAU, but which was kind of presenting how the women organizations were organizing, what they were doing, having a special section where they were describing what was going on, which project they had. And I would say this part of the women organization itself was quite progressive. So there were some groups inside, for example, the one in Dresden, they were discussing and organizing, for example, projects like they wanted to have a one kitchen house where only one part had to cook for all the others to kind of reduce the housework and all this kind of heavy work women had to do all the time. On the other hand, the whole organization of the women itself was really not welcomed, actually, in the FAU day. And they had a lot of harassment and sexism and were facing, actually, a lot of rejection. And the men were actually not up for that. Like from one hand, okay, we kind of need and want to organize more people. On the other hand, there was a huge rejection and they really had to fight for this organizing, that they could organize themselves and that they get this newspaper in the general newspaper and all this stuff. So I wouldn't say it was really progressive, because actually you had all this kind of stereotypes you can imagine back then really present. And yeah, eventually the also there you could see that there was a beginning and it worked a little bit well. There were people like Millie Wittkopf Rocker. She was the her partner's, maybe people know, is
Rudolf Rocker.
Yeah, exactly. And, she was organizing the Berlin section, and she was one of the ones also writing a lot of theoretical stuff, the same as Amy Koester, who was located here in Dresden, also had a partner in FAUD. And there were also not, they were not only talking about this household stuff, so they were also dearly discussing political concepts and ideas. So I think there was a potential for them, but not inside the whole FAUD for sure. This was really conservative in taking back in the sense of gender roles.
Well, I'd like to comment on that too. So FAU faced the problem of declining membership in the 20s. On the other hand, I think many historians, I mean, today's historians and also in the past decades, came to appreciate FAU in terms of their ideas, because of their ideas, they were still pretty influential in spite of losing membership. I mean, it was just mentioned that they then had the idea that housewives are actually a very important part of the working class. And they, I mean, even explicitly said that this is work that is necessary for running capitalism. So we must organize housewives too. So in the 20s, they had a discussion already going on that would become very important and influential in the feminist movement 50 years later in the 70s. So I think we should not underestimate the importance of the organization, even though, of course, there were also conservative men and a certain backlash, but these ideas were there. And the women's union within the broader union had managed to get themselves recognized by the Congress, nevertheless. And also in other areas, there were very progressive ideas being discussed and even being practiced in FAU back then. For example, the idea of free love, which then meant, well, not marrying, but still not marrying in the 20s was a huge thing. And or many theorists and important members of FAU then were pretty vocal in criticizing the Soviet Union and party communism. So Rudolf Rocker and others, they wrote books criticizing the Soviet Union already in 1919, 1920, when the whole left was still pretty pretty optimistic and pretty convinced by the Soviet Union. Many socialists and communists only later, only in the 30s, would come to realize what the Soviet Union was actually about. So I think we have to analyze and we have to find reasons for the declining membership. But still, the organization was important also because of the ideas. And the ideas are living on until today.
Yeah, for sure. I think this is also, you really can see in this women's magazine, which was published here in Dresden, what you just said, that really at the beginning of the 20s, there were solidarity calls for imprisoned anarchists in Soviet Union, or they were discussing how about socialization of kids and how to, like all this kind of traditions which are present in the society, like which are usually coming from the church, right? Like how you're supposed to celebrate or like bring the kids into the church. And there's a, how's this word? This, but not, yeah, baptizing, no? And then later on, when they are older, you have this other communion. And for that, they back then already had this kind of alternative. Not today, I don't know if this exists actually in other parts of the world, but here in Germany, you have something which is called Jugendweihe. It's right now a bit so associated with the GDR, but actually this kind of idea existed before already, and that you have that you from one hand celebrate kind of certain traditions in life, but they explicitly don't want to have them connected to the church. So, for example, when the kids are growing, you're not only celebrating this birthday, but you're also celebrating this kind of welcoming in a society. And this back then they called this Jugendweihe. And this was also something progressive, that you're doing things which are not supposed to happen because this is all connected with the church. Or the whole question of single motherhood and all these kind of indeed really progressive things were present when what you can see in these newspapers and magazines which were published back then. And the question of sexual life, actually, and also quite openly.
Zu Gast sind freundliche Menschen an die Natur angepasst im Einklang. Sie pflanzen Bäume, sie essen Plastik und auch Atommüll schmeckt ihnen fantastisch. Sie demontieren Waffen und bauen Kinderspielzeug aus den Einzelteilen, die luftig gefiltert wie neu. Das Wasser schmeckt nach Metall und Exkrementen, aber löscht den Durst und ist in festen Händen eines Großkonzerns. Die Gebühren steigen simultan zur Stimmung. Es ist die Blütezeit für die Pharma, Unternehmen, Medikamente für jede und jeden. Alle sind glücklich, niemand beschwert sich. Sie waschen das Öl von den Möwen und das Meer ist schwarz, frei von Fischen, voll vom Boden gefangen zwischen den Inseln der lebenden Toten. Das Meer erträgt, das Meer erträgt, der Berg zerfällt. Die Sonne brennt, perfekte Welt, die Luft erstickt, der Baum verwelkt, das Mensch bleibt Mensch, perfekte Welt, das Meer erträgt, der Berg zerfällt, die Sonne brennt, perfekte Welt, die Luft erstickt, der Baum verwelkt, das Mensch bleibt Mensch, perfekte Welt.
Begrüßen dich mit Vogelgesang aus der Dose. Die schmutzige Wäsche, an der die dreckigen Träume noch haften, ausgezogen in den Frischhaltefolien ist alles noch genau beim Alten. Konserviert wie die uns so fremden Emotionen, die wir beinhalten. Ich sehe schöne Menschen, die genau wissen, dass sich die Jahreszeit geändert hat. Der neue Katalog ist da und farblich adäquat passend zur Landschaft. Alles abgestimmt auf die Umgebung oder vielleicht auch andersrum. Wir sind hier noch ein Stück voraus, die Natur ist noch nicht ganz angekommen. Vielleicht holt sie uns irgendwann ein, doch bis dahin ist noch viel Zeit. Und der Weg zum Paradies ist nicht mehr weit, es passt noch mehr hier rein. Die Bagger graben die Zukunft für Shoppingcenter-Unternehmen. Investoren suchen Schutz bei erfolgreichen Entscheidungsträgern. Die entscheiden dürfen durch die Stimmen von dummen, stummen, feigen Wählern, die mehr oder weniger wissen, was sie tun und sich hier durch jeden, der sie vertreten will, vertreten lassen in der Hoffnung, alles wird gut. Die ihre Namensschilder beschriften und sich perfekt zu benehmen versuchen.
Die Sonne brennt, perfekte Welt, die Luft erstickt, der Baum verwelkt, das Mensch bleibt Mensch, perfekte Welt, das Meer ertrinkt, der Berg zerfällt, die Sonne brennt, perfekte Welt, die Luft erstickt, der Baum verwelkt, das Mensch bleibt Mensch, perfekte Welt. Ein wenig irre, aber sie lächeln häufig, selbst bevor sie erbrechen. Und sie riechen an Abfall mit leuchtenden Augen. Sie bauen Plätze und Parks zum Verscheuchen von Tauben. Sie wollen immer das, was sie auch kriegen. Sie lieben, sie fühlen, sie lecken Schwerter ab, statt sie zu führen.
an der scharfen Seite, um auch mal Schmerz zu spüren. Immer ein Scherz auf den Lippen, um den Schmerz zu küren. Bis sie vollführen, sie verwenden, sie beginnen, um zu beenden. Sie weinen, nur um zu weinen.
Well, I'd like to talk about something else, because we are now discussing syndicalism in Germany and syndicalism within the broader anti-authoritarian anarchist movement. I think what many people credit VAU for is that in many cities, VAU is pretty well organized. So we have membership dues, we have our funds, we have our own offices, we have a secretariat, we have people working reliably for many years, and this is not something that applies to other factions of the anarchist movement, where there are a lot of problems with people being active for 1-2 years, then switching the topic or just leaving the city and so on. And I think this makes VAU attractive to other comrades, to anarchists in Germany. And this is a good thing. I like it when people join VAU, because they want to join a well-organized organization. But I think there's also a problem coming in here, and that is that people join VAU with some sort of political mentality. Let's say they come from the ecology movement or from the Antifa movement, where people usually run campaigns or organize marches, and they come with that mentality to VAU, looking for an interesting project or nice campaign they can do, and then they bring this mentality back to VAU. But I think syndicalism works differently. Here you have to work on the long run. You don't make like many short campaigns, but you try to organize workers in their workplaces. So, and I think this is why there's often a certain clash of mentalities and that kind of discussions within VAU. And this is something I think we should, we should consider more within VAU, and we should also talk about more openly. That sometimes we're attractive to anarchists, but we're not an organization that is anarchist in their way, but we're also syndicalists, and this is the difference. Do you want to add something to that?
I was wondering, because I was thinking that that's why I mentioned it actually before, in historical perspective, that I always was amazed by this huge family pictures, that I would agree that it's actually an organization which gives a more stronger and longer perspective for people. And I think that's why this is a possibility, actually, to organize people apart from what you actually in the second part right now kind of criticized or kind of problematized. Because as I understood the general idea of syndicalism, it's a really wide, broader concept. So it gives a space actually for people having a longer lasting organization, also with their families, if they have some, or with their kind of social surrounding, to be more involved there and not just have a meeting and then go apart and never know what the other person is doing, rather than having a more wider also social perspective in that, or at least this is how I imagine it, that it would be reasonable. And I think I do see the point you brought, because I also have the feeling that there are also, depending on the cities, VAU groups which are really doing the union work, and there are groups which are more kind of a political group who are actually doing this campaigning and stuff like that. So, for example, I think in Dresden there are more, or as I perceive it, more this kind of campaigning. And it's kind of shifting the topic depending on who is more active right now and what is maybe important to these people. On the other hand, what they have here is this kind of lion red climbers. So they're doing work in the rural areas. from one hand supporting this kind of climbing tradition which is present here in the mountains, from the other hand organizing the rural areas. But also, again, it feels more as a kind of a political group than really union work, which kind of is, yeah, kind of basic part of the syndicalism. So I guess this is important for FAO, no? To make clear, to make it more clear, actually, what are the strategies, no? And why it is important, I think, or what are the... Like that it is not another political organization like you can join Ums Ganze, or which is not an anarchist organization, or you are going to the climate camp protest, but that this is a kind of a different concept. But I think this also brings the contradiction between young people organizing. And I think it often, for me, doesn't really make sense if you were at the 18, 17, to start organizing in the union, because you're not work if you're not working, right? If you're a student, then you anyway doesn't have the prospect of working class at all. Mostly, not all, but a lot of people. So I think this is for me also an organization where you actually start organizing when you really start getting a job and you started organizing on your working place. Then it's kind of clear what is where the path goes. At least this is how it makes sense. I completely understand or see your point, but I think this is also the question of where am I in my politicization? What is my interest right now? And I guess this is also a problem of understanding when and how I'm organizing where. And I think in general in Germany, this organizing on the working place is something, or organizing on the place where I am, is something not so present, no? People do campaigning, switching, shifting, no constant work, going in to other places, struggling there, instead of actually struggling at the very moment where they are living. And I think this is, what you see also in the FO.
For me, the German anarchist movement, as well as the bigger abstraction of this left movement, the radical left and so on, is quite upper middle class. So this is not the working class communities or people coming from working class communities. How much of that is actually affecting the work that is happening in FAO? Like, you would have people who have no idea what work is, and they would join the union and they are like, oh, cool, I'm now part of the syndicalist union. Or actually you are picking up the workers, you are picking up the working part of the anarchist movement, not the NGO workers, you know, that are not fair to be, they do not really need the union, they feel really comfortable and they are running their own small businesses, rather than like really places where the conflicts are escalating, where the things are not as good as they can be in the other places, or they can potentially lead to some social tensions and develop some revolutionary perspectives.
Well, I don't know if I'd actually agree with your distinction between activists that all come from the middle class, and then there's the working class somewhere else, which is something different. Because I think in Germany, in the 21st century, huge parts of the working class are actually highly educated. Some have very good training, others have even studied. Still, many of them are just workers at the end of the day. You can study, you can do a bachelor's and master's degree and then be a social worker, and then or work in a kindergarten or work in a factory as a technician. So I wouldn't make this distinction. I'd say there are rather different factions within the working class. And I'd agree that in FAO we have many well-educated people, and we need to make a bigger effort to reach out to other factions within the working class. Let's say migrant agency workers, or those going to the traditional factories. So there is that, and yeah, these different factions and milieus also have different cultures. But I wouldn't say middle class people have no idea of what it means to go to work. And well, when we frame it as different milieus and cultures, I think there is definitely that problem within FAU that we need to make a bigger effort to reach out to other milieus and other factions of the working class. And well, that's not an easy thing to do. In Jena, for example, we kind of managed to be in touch with those people too. We have that counseling, and every once in a while we get in touch with agency workers that are mostly immigrants that come to our counseling because they've just been fired or because they're not paid their full wage, and then we get in touch with them, they join up with the union, and we help them get what they're due. But this is on a very small scale. That it's a big question within the working class movement, also within the syndicalist movement, how to do that. And I think the best way to do that is actually organize at your workplace, and then you can go to other workers and say, hi, my name is this and that. I work, for example, as a social worker, or I work in the university. I'm a unionist. We have a group in our workplace. That's the problems we're having. And I'd like to get in touch with you. You're also a worker. You should organize too. Let's join forces. Or go to workers who are already doing something or already having their group. But then you can talk to them on the same level, because in your own life, you're also unionist. This is something that must change, because I think many of the active members of FAU are active within FAU, but not in their workplace. So this is one way to change that. Another way of changing that is going, let's say, to the places, to the neighborhoods, or to the workplaces where other factions of the working class are. This is something that's recently been discussed by the Angry Workers of the World, who published a book called Class Power on 0 Hours. So it's a group of working class militants from London who moved to a very migrant and working class area where there are a lot of stores and factories, and started to settle in there. And they issued a newspaper, and they would also offer counseling, and they would try to, well, they got jobs in the area and then try to talk to their colleagues and get in touch with them. So you can do it this way too. There are comrades in Jena who did that, but they're rather focused on the whole housing issue and not that much on workplaces. So these are two ideas, I think, of tackling the problem. So organizing yourselves and then going to others, going where the others are. And I think we need a change of culture and a change of language, because our culture and language is still pretty much influenced by the left-wing and anti-authoritarian subculture. And I think this might be alienating to many people who might be interested in our ideas, but they might feel estranged by the way we behave and talk about things. And I think we could get a bit more relaxed and open up to those people, changing culture and language, but not our values.
And are there discussions within FAU, apart from like moving to the working class neighborhoods and trying to get back to the different part of the working class, as you said, are there discussions about like what will be the future of syndicalism? How would FAU look in like 10, 20, 30 years with more automation and so on and so forth? What is eventually the place of the working class organized in syndicalist unions in Germany?
Well, to be honest, we don't have a very structured discussion on some kind of long-term strategy for the next, say, 10 years. Not on, let's say, on the level of the Federation. But, okay, there are a lot of discussions going on between members and comrades. So I think VfL Leipzig, for example, they managed pretty well to get a good reputation amongst precarious workers and also immigrant workers. They have counseling just like we have in Jena too. And they had some pretty intense struggles in the past 2-3 years. And I think the next level is to intensify long-term workplace organizing as opposed to helping workers who are in dire need or helping workers in a hot job where tensions are already very high. So I think we should focus even more on long-term organizing, workplace organizing. And I think we should also start not just picking struggles coming to us by workers coming to our counseling and asking for advice or support, but looking strategically for industries or for shops where we think it is important and it's strategically meaningful to organize. So I think we should try even more having a discussion about what's the situation in a given city, what's the economic situation there, what are the shops and the companies where strategically speaking it's important to do organizing, and then go there and do that. This is something that I think the bigger business unions organized within DGB are more used to doing and they are more successful at, because they also have the means, they can hire organizers and so on. And I think this is something we in V should do more. And so apart from doing workplace organizing and doing workplace organizing in workplaces identified according to a strategy, I think we should also focus on transforming our structures, our union structures. I think but this is my personal opinion, other members certainly do disagree with that, but I think we are still pretty much in the idea of doing very frequent meetings with everybody attending and having lengthy discussions. And I think that does not apply to the reality of working class people who work 8-hour shifts, 40 hours a week, have a family to feed or family members to take care of. You cannot attend weekly lengthy meetings or attend every general assembly taking place every 2 weeks or every 4 weeks. I think we need to develop a structure that is, of course, still grassroots and democratic, but where there's more, where we have more roles and more responsibilities to distribute. So not every member has to be present for every decision at every meeting, but can give the certain responsibility to others and then discuss things maybe at less frequent but more important and bigger meetings. So I think we need to adapt our structures to the realities of working class people's lives. So this is something I think we should focus on too in the next years to come.
Thanks a lot. It was a really interesting interview, informing one. And we see each other on the barricades, hopefully, at the next revolutionary momentum in Germany.
And that was it for today. Thanks for listening. You can find the archive of our radio shows on the website of the Anarchist Network Dresden. Elephant in the Room is a proud member of Channel Zero Network, an English-based anarchist radio podcast network run by radical media makers from around the world.